Welcome to this new detailed edition of the BayPay Forum Blockchain News. My name is Cindy and today is September 28, 2020. This edition is brought to you by PayCademy, the first business academy to learn payments and fintech. If you have some news in payments and fintech, send it to us at press@baypayforum.com and we will do our best to include your news. In this edition, we will talk about First Mover, Bitcoin low exchange balance looks bullish but chart looks bearish as $11,000 nears. Bitwise Bitcoin fund doubles to $9 million as investor fears grow over runaway inflation. Bitcoin balances on exchanges at two-year low and that may be a bullish sign. Crypto long and short, the OCC's stablecoin statement is a seed of financial innovation. The inevitable marriage of yield farming and NFTs, explained. Now let's get started. First Mover, Bitcoin low exchange balance looks bullish but chart looks bearish as $11,000 nears. There's a degree of transparency in cryptocurrencies that doesn't exist in traditional markets like stocks and bonds. Thanks to data that's easily extracted from blockchains, everyone can see everyone else moving their money around. That means traders can keep an eye on exchange wallets to gauge whether investors and crypto miners are getting their Bitcoin into position for a possible sale or taking balances down from the exchanges in anticipation of holding for the longer term. The latter might be what's happening now, CoinDesk's Muyao Shen reported Monday. Total balances of Bitcoin on major exchanges has hit its lowest levels since November 2018. It could be an indication of bullishness among Bitcoin traders. There's no reason to sell now, Mike Alfred, CEO of Digital Assets Data, told Shen in a phone interview. Why would you be selling when you're at the beginning of a wave of potential corporate treasuries and institutional investors coming in? Another interpretation, according to Arcane Research, is that traders are taking their Bitcoin off exchanges to deploy them in the decentralized finance sector, known as DeFi. Juicy returns can be obtained from tokenizing crypto assets and depositing them as collateral in semi-automated, blockchain-based trading and lending platforms. As CoinDesk reported earlier this week, tokenized Bitcoin has become one of the largest assets on DeFi. Currently, there are more than 108,000 BTC worth some $1.1 billion minted from seven issuers, according to Dune Analytics. That might be another bullish sign. Bitcoin maximalists would decry the use of Bitcoin on Ethereum, arguing that it isn't real Bitcoin. David Durhi, an analyst for the cryptocurrency trading platform eToro, wrote Monday in an email. I view this development as positive for the sector, as it highlights an evolution within the industry. Whatever the case, it's all there to see. Bitcoin's upward momentum is again running out of steam near the psychological resistance of $11,000. The cryptocurrency clocked highs near $10,950 early Monday and is currently trading near $10,850. The cryptocurrency's weekly chart MACD histogram, an indicator used to identify trend changes and trend strength, has dipped below zero for the first time since March, indicating a bearish shift in the broader trend. Similarly, the 5 and 10-week averages have produced a bearish crossover. As such, Bitcoin could face chart-driven selling pressure. On the higher side, $11,000 is the level to beat for the bulls. Bitwise Bitcoin fund doubles to $9 million as investor fears grow over runaway inflation. Accredited investors worried about out-of-control inflation have poured millions into Bitwise's Bitcoin fund as a means to preserve the value of their portfolios. An amended filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, last week showed the asset manager had raised, in total, just under $8.9 million for its Bitcoin fund, which provides accredited U.S. investors with exposure to Bitcoin through a traditional product. This marks the single largest increase in assets raised in the fund's two-year history. A filing from 2019 shows the Bitcoin fund had attracted $4.1 million in investment, meaning the fund has more than doubled in size in the past year. While Bitcoin has come on in leaps and bounds in its acceptance among the traditional investment community, Bitwise's head of research, Matthew Hogan, told CoinDesk the more immediate cause for the surge in the fund's size came from concerns over runaway inflation. With the unprecedented expansion of the Fed's balance sheet, the radical amounts of fiscal stimulus, and the Fed's new and significantly more dovish inflation policy, Bitwise clients are looking for a hedge, he said in an email. Bitcoin is the most efficient hedge for inflation that exists in today's market, he added. Fiscal stimulus has become a favored tool for governments and central banks as they battle to keep economic activity alive in the wake of the pandemic. The Federal Reserve initially pumped more than $2.8 trillion into the economy and dropped interest to rock bottom rates. As Congress debates another $2.4 trillion stimulus package in the run-up to the November elections, Fed Chair Jay Powell said this month that the central bank was unlikely to tighten monetary policy for at least 3 years and will even tolerate inflation above the 2% target in order to make up for the drop in consumer prices during the peak of the pandemic. Hogan said that many of Bitwise's clients were financial advisors who serve wealthy investors, themselves wary about the debilitating effects inflation can have on their portfolios. Many investors see Bitcoin's fixed supply of 21 million as a means to preserve value in the event loose monetary policy leads to runaway inflation. Indeed, other fund managers have experienced similar surges in demand from the same stratum of well-heeled investors. In the summer, $250 million found its way into three funds run by the New York Digital Investments Group, NYDIG. Pantera Capital told the SEC in August it had received nearly $165 million in placements from qualified investors, those worth at least $5 million. Bitcoin balances on exchanges at two-year low, and that may be a bullish sign. The balance of Bitcoin on major exchanges has hit its lowest levels since November 2018. Yet unlike that time, when Bitcoin was in the depths of the crypto winter, some see this current spate of low Bitcoin balances on exchanges as a sign that a new generation of investors is putting its money in it for the long term. The last time Bitcoin balances on exchanges were at this low a point was in November 2018, according to data from Glassnode. A hard fork on Bitcoin Cash that month may have also caused the declining Bitcoin balances on exchanges, since some owners were moving their Bitcoins to private wallets in order to claim the new tokens from the fork. Bitcoin then continued its bearish trend into the beginning of 2019, before it recovered in April of that year. Long-term holders as a possible reason. Low Bitcoin balances on centralized exchanges do not necessarily imply a bearish market trend. In fact, it could reflect a bullish view from Bitcoin holders, as they move to longer-term holding strategies, such as cold wallets, Glassnode tweeted back on April 14. That may be the case with this most recent drop in balances, according to Mike Alfred, CEO of Digital Assets Data. There's no reason to sell now when you have large corporate treasuries like MicroStrategy buying the asset now, Alfred told CoinDesk in a phone interview. Why would you be selling when you're at the beginning of a wave of potential corporate treasuries and institutional investors coming in? South Korea-based data provider CryptoQuant also captured the declining Bitcoin balances on exchanges. According to the company's CEO, Ki Young Ju, this means there are fewer Bitcoin holders who could sell their Bitcoins on exchanges, avoiding a possible major market correction. However, this decline hasn't been a straight line down. According to another crypto data source, Chainalysis, their data show daily net inflow of Bitcoin to exchanges logging its biggest single-day increase on September 21 since the market crash on March 12. Philip Gradwell, an economist at the company, told CoinDesk that the number indicated a weakening market. While the overall amount of Bitcoin held on exchanges is low, it has increased over the last few days, still small relative to the longer-term decline in Bitcoin held on exchanges, Gradwell wrote in an email response to CoinDesk. The rise of Bitcoin on DeFi. The latest Bitcoin balance drop on exchanges started in mid-March when prices took a steep tumble to a 10-month low, according to Norwegian cryptanalysis firm Arcane Research's weekly report on September 22. Arcane Research attributed the decreased Bitcoin balance on exchanges partly to the white-hot decentralized finance (DeFi) sector, where Bitcoin is being tokenized on Ethereum by those lending the cryptocurrency in exchange for yields. In the same period, since March 15, 2020, more than 100,000 BTC have found their way into Ethereum protocols, which could explain some of the outflow, the research team wrote. As CoinDesk reported earlier this week, tokenized Bitcoin has become one of the largest assets on DeFi. Currently, more than 108,000 BTC worth some $1.1 billion minted from seven issuers, according to Dune Analytics. An influx of less experienced investors. Others, at the same time, say that a new flux of crypto investors since the coronavirus pandemic started could be the reason for the low Bitcoin balance on exchanges. These investors, coming mostly from traditional financial markets, may prefer white glove services such as a crypto investment fund to manage their crypto portfolios for them, instead of going to crypto exchanges themselves. As a result, the Bitcoin balance on exchanges has been dropping this year both consistently and significantly. Digital Assets Data's Alfred said that crypto fund companies such as Grayscale, a subsidiary of Digital Currency Group, which also owns CoinDesk, are buying a large amount of Bitcoin, as both high net worth individuals and institutions are putting new capitals into the crypto market. For example, at the start of Q3, Grayscale had $4.1 billion in assets under management, AUM. As of September 23, its AUM was $5.5 billion. Traditional investors may be concerned with easy monetary policies of the Federal Reserve, other central banks and governments around the world. But unlike the old generation of crypto investors, who were often technologically sophisticated early adopters, new crypto investors are less familiar with how crypto assets work and therefore less comfortable with holding and managing bitcoins themselves, according to Alfred. They thus turn over their investment capital to more experienced firms. These are people that don't know much about Bitcoin, Alfred said. They just know that they want to own something in crypto, and they don't want to do it themselves. This sentiment is echoed by Babel Finance, a Hong Kong-based crypto lender. In a WeChat conversation with CoinDesk, Simons Chen, executive director of investment and trading of the company, said that Bitcoin balances on crypto exchanges have been taken away by both decentralized exchanges and crypto investment funds. Institutional investors are withdrawing their Bitcoin from exchanges and transferring them elsewhere, the chat wrote. So the low Bitcoin balance on exchanges is happening not because of any market correction, and as a result, there has not been much pricing pressure. Notably, Bitcoin's price, which is known for its volatility, has been becoming less volatile this year. Alfred said it is partly due to more capital flows into the leading cryptocurrency, as well. I think volatility has come down pretty dramatically in part because there's so much traditional capital coming in, which really dampens the volatility, he said. You have this very supportive bid coming from all this new money coming in that believes in the long-term fundamental story and is not buying just to sell right away. Crypto long and short, the OCC's stablecoin statement is a seed of financial innovation. An unsurprising statement from a financial regulator is sending some welcome signals that point to a spurt of innovation ahead. The U.S. Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, OCC, issued a statement earlier this week saying that national banks can provide services to stablecoin issuers in the U.S. This is not a surprise, as banks have been doing so for some time. But they have been doing so under a cloud of regulatory uncertainty. The statement gives the first sign of official clarity on the idea that stablecoins are legitimate representations of value. Acceptance and support. Why is this significant for markets? To start with, it signals a growing regulatory acceptance of stablecoins. While fiat-backed blockchain-based tokens have been often talked about in the halls of power, especially after Facebook's stablecoin project Libra was announced last year, they had not been recognized in an official statement as an acceptable result of financial innovation until now. And the U.S. is not the only significant economic bloc to signal acceptance. Earlier this week, the European Central Bank, ECB, issued a report that assesses the threats stablecoins could pose. But rather than hint that stablecoins might be in trouble, the report conveys that the ECB is figuring out how to mitigate the potential risks. The issue was becoming urgent, given the explosive increase in stablecoin demand. The total value of stablecoins has now surpassed $18 billion, up from $10 billion just 4 months ago. Much of this growth has been driven by international demand for dollars as well as the increasingly sophisticated financial tools being built on top of public blockchain technology. USDC, the leading US-based stablecoin, has seen its market cap almost quadruple so far this year, to over $2 billion. Reading between the lines, the message goes even further. Acceptance is one thing, support is another. The OCC is signaling to banks that stablecoin activity is legitimate, and that reserve accounts will be offered the same federal protections as any other. This could incentivize banks to actively seek stablecoin business, and in so doing, broaden both their client base and their stake in crypto markets. A recent statement from the OCC said that U.S. national banks could now custody crypto assets. Presumably that includes stablecoins, too. So, a bank could attract not just stablecoin issuers, but also their clients. It would then make sense to facilitate the transfers of stablecoins between clients, and, why not, even between banks. New payments networks could emerge, which in turn could give rise to a host of new banking services. For an industry squeezed by low interest rates and looming defaults, this potential growth vector will eventually start to look attractive. And since one of the main use cases today for US-based stablecoin USDC, the second largest stablecoin by market cap, is extracting yield from decentralized finance DeFi platforms, this could be the incentive needed for traditional finance to start to take an open-minded look at the innovations going on in blockchain-based financial applications. New clients could be courted with new types of savings products, which could in turn accelerate the transformation of traditional banking. Growth and innovation. It could also embolden new types of stablecoin issuers to come forward with further innovations. To those of us working in the industry, it may seem like stablecoin issuers are everywhere. Looking in from the outside, however, most of them are either small, offshore or both. Other than the members of USDC Issuer Center Consortium, founded by Coinbase and Circle in 2018, there are few large US-based corporations commercially active in the space. Last year, we reported that IBM was building support for a network of stablecoin issuing banks, and that Wells Fargo had created a corporate stablecoin for internal cross-border transfers. JP Morgan is apparently still working on JPM Coin, also designed for cross-border payments between institutional clients, announced in 2019. Visa is looking at ways to harness the potential of stablecoins for B2B payments. The list goes on, but no large corporation has yet successfully launched a stablecoin with real-world traction. That is likely to change. Blockchain-based tokens to represent internal transfers is a relatively straightforward application, and just the tip of what's possible. An as yet unexplored option is that of programmable monetary instruments, such as stablecoins that have embedded KYC, or stablecoins that could be distributed amongst certain communities for specific uses limited by code. The OCC statement is likely to give momentum to collaboration between corporations and their banks on creative payments and engagement tools. The fine line between securities and stablecoins with features is no doubt a factor holding back many private projects. There seems to be regulatory progress there, too. The U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission said this week that they are open to discussions with stablecoin issuers as to whether or not their token would classify as a security, which implies that some would not. While not exactly clear, it does open the regulatory door to more conversations about innovation at the highest levels, as well as case-by-case decisions that, while slow, would at least give a more solid foundation for development. Gaps and standards. There are barriers, however. The infrastructure is still young, and although it is growing rapidly in both scope and scalability, the public blockchains on which most current stablecoins run have scalability issues which at times can push up fees to uncomfortable levels. And, given recent progress in payments infrastructure, stablecoin payments may end up being slower than paying by some more traditional methods. Stablecoin settlement is also still an issue. The U.S. Uniform Commercial Code (UCC) covers settlement finality, a legal construct that defines the point after which a transaction cannot be reversed for private systems, but does not address the issue of blockchain settlement finality. With proof-of-work blockchains, settlement is probabilistic, not definite, until a certain number of blocks have passed. And even then, time just makes it increasingly unlikely that a transaction can be reversed. At what stage does a blockchain-based transaction become totally irrevocable? This is understandably an important issue for market participants. And for many use cases, using stablecoins could add a middleman, rather than streamline operations. This could further impact costs, especially if different fiat currencies are at either end of a transaction. The potential utility in cross-border transfers highlights the need for an international framework if these instruments are to fulfill their potential to streamline flows of capital. Earlier this month, the Governor of the Bank of England called for a G20 mandate for standard-setting bodies to clarify standards. In April, the Financial Stability Board, FSB, published the responses to its public consultation on global stablecoin regulation, which make for constructive reading. While not a regulator, the FSB monitors the global financial system and makes recommendations to protect its stability and integrity, and its work could provide a structure for international cooperation. And regulators will always be concerned about the fragility risks that growing stablecoin popularity could introduce into the global financial system. A welcome start. Regulatory clarity of any sort is an underappreciated trigger for innovation. True, the crypto industry has no shortage of creative code and ambitious applications. It also has no shortage of people willing to put time and money into devising new applications for new types of value. And the whirlwind of activity going on in the decentralized finance space is generating astonishing growth since the start of 2020. Value locked in DeFi contracts has increased from roughly $675 million to over $8 billion. But that is still a small speck in the financial universe. Adoption and impactful applications will not make a meaningful impact on finance until regulatory clarity encourages serious money to take notice. I struggled to come up with a metaphor that could represent this type of trigger, one that did not involve everything falling down, which means dominoes are out, things blowing up, the spark in the fireworks shed won't do, or anything to do with viral contagion, because obviously, in the end, the best I could come up with was a seed that becomes a tree that is so impressive it encourages planters in other regions to plant their own. This image is lacking in oomph and sparkle, but finance moves slowly. And even a forest of new trees would not convey the scale of innovation that we could be on the verge of seeing. It is hopefully a reminder, though, that meaningful and long-lasting change starts small. The inevitable marriage of yield farming and NFTs, explained. Why is the marriage of non-fungible tokens, NFTs, and decentralized finance, DeFi, happening now? It's debatable, but you can make an argument that it comes back to DeFi's favorite robo-advisor for yield, Yearn, finance. Lately, everything in DeFi seems to link back to Yearn, finance in some way. The excitement in DeFi has shifted to the NFT market, with something like a weird DeFi moment getting ever weirder, as groups form up to mint rare digital artifacts to be attained in unique ways and financialize their ownership, thanks in part to picks and shovels work undertaken by the yeomen of online collectibles. The plethora of strange new experiments has been led in particular by the token meme, inspired by a tweet from consensus staffer Jordan Lyle. To explain meme, though, a lot of other developments need to be visited first. NFT basics. Reminder, NFTs are one-of-a-kind tokens made possible by Ethereum's ERC-721 standard. Pioneered by CryptoPunks, then standardized and popularized by CryptoKitties, crypto collectibles started much like trading cards that could make babies, at least in CryptoKitties' case, but they were always envisioned to have more potential than baseball cards. Ever since Napster, ownership and rights of digitally distributed intellectual property has been a problem. It's hard to own that media, but you can do it pretty cleanly using tokens, Priyanka Desai, VP of Operations at Ethereum startup OpenLaw, told CoinDesk in a phone call. Desai's been talking to NFT pioneers lately as she helps to put together a new decentralized autonomous organization, DAO, called Flamingo, whose investors are focused on NFTs. NFTs have not captivated investor attention until quite recently, because lending, borrowing and risk management, what we now call DeFi, has taken up all Ethereum's oxygen in 2020. So Ethereans largely lost interest in NFTs there for a while, and who could blame them? You could buy them and sell them, and sometimes games would come together, but they seldom held players' attention for very long. There were more dynamic markets to game, art's fine but money is money. Even when there had been buzz, some projects would rise up only to fade away, revealing a weakness in the NFT specification. Crypto Strikers, for example, a sports memorabilia project launched during the World Cup, is long gone. Soccer-focused Sorare has emerged in its wake. Also gone, Panda Earth and Crypto Jingles and more, and with them the various artworks that made NFTs more than just a weird string of numbers in an Ethereum wallet. These days, teams are using perpetual data storage solution Arweave to address the issue of NFT impermanence. The NFT yield farming crossover event. There has been years of fertilizer, but somehow the excitement engendered this summer by yield farming has come to NFTs this fall, and so the harvest is ready. And here's how Yearn could have helped. When the DeFi Gateway created YInsure, a way to do KYC-free insurance on any crypto asset, it used NFTs to represent the policy with insurers. Insurance policies have unique properties, so ERC-20 didn't make sense since it needed to include covered address plus amount plus duration, Yearn's lead developer, Andre Cronier, told CoinDesk via Telegram. ERC-20 is the token standard that launched 1,000 coins. So, once reminded of ERC-721's existence by DeFi's top Chad, the industry ran with it. Was it exactly a causal relationship? Who knows? The larger point of NFT and DeFi coming together is more about a growing mood than a clear chain of events. Weird DeFi showed how open finance could become more elfin. Elves need toys. NFTs were right there. Blockade Games is a company looking for every way it can to push the properties of tokenized game assets to their limit. People want to play, Blockade CEO Marguerite de Courcel told CoinDesk in a phone call. Also known as Coin Artist, she just issued her own NFT, as well. Crypto communities have always been trying to be games, she said. The financialization of NFTs. A lot of people in crypto are rich, and that makes all the best stuff too expensive for the cryptolitariat. As much as people like owning expensive stuff in crypto, they like owning stuff they can sell whenever they want even more, call it a liquidity fetish. NFTs had managed to be expensive, but they had not managed to be liquid, not until DeFi thinking intervened. The general trend is, okay, NFTs are cool, but it's a relatively illiquid asset class compared to tokens, said Coin Fund's Jake Bruckman. Bruckman has always been bullish on NFTs, never losing that focus even as other investors fully turn their attention elsewhere. NFTs are actually a financial asset class and they need financial infrastructure, Bruckman said. The stranger products are emergent phenomena of that financialization. Bruckman gave the example of Arc Gallery, which is a DAO for CryptoPunks. The punks were made pre-ERC-721 and have become quite valuable as early, cool and rare. There are only 10,000 such punks, each completely distinct. Arc allows people to crowdfund a punk, owning a fraction of the token, and then voting on whether or not to sell it if there's an offer. If there is a successful offer, everyone gets a proportionate share of the payment, based on how much they own. This has made CryptoPunks trade at ever higher prices, allowing more people to feel like they had a piece of one. It's clear that the spikes in volume have gone much higher this year when viewed on NFT data site nonfungible.com. NIFTEX has taken that even further. Launched early this year with funding from digital currency group CoinDesk's parent company, NIFTEX started off creating indices for NFTs, such as digital real estate or digital cards. But the real innovation kicked off when the firm fractionalized expensive NFTs into what it calls shards, really, Just ERC-20 tokens, fungible slivers of previously singular digital assets. The shard system works somewhat like what Arc Gallery does, except only someone who holds one of the ERC-20 tokens that represents partial ownership of an item can make an offer. The offer automatically succeeds if it fails to receive enough objections in 2 weeks, with a clever strategy built in to punish low ball bids. NIFTX did its first fractionalization in May and, like Arc, the firm is seeing a lot more liquidity. Shard holders own a fractionalized, extremely rare Axie Infinity card called Almas that saw over 1,000 ETH transacted in its first week after sharding. Joel Hubert, one of the two co-founders, estimated its liquidity all year would have been more like 300 or 400 ETH in a few trades, without sharding. On non-fungible, Axie Infinity shows appreciably more dollars getting transacted even if the volumes are only bumped up slightly. I like where we're at because Ethereum is all about experimentation, Hubert said. The larger point to all of this is that content is finding a path to fair remuneration on the internet. Added Flamingos Desai, when you start talking about how content creators are paid, that's where DeFi comes in, and when you start talking about property of creators, that's all NFTs. NFT mining. For her personal NFT, De Corcel used NIFTX to sell off a portion of her shards into tokens called Coin. She said she wants people to see it as play money. First thing we're doing is the most basic sort of farm, she said, driving home the intended playfulness. Coin holders who add to the Uniswap pool can stake their liquidity provider, LP tokens and earn another token, CRED, which will offer advantages in blockades games, as well as additional coin. Rewarding liquidity with a fresh new token is a particular kind of yield farming, liquidity mining. Of course, that's not the only or first mining in the digital property space, and mining is what this whole story is about, DeFi and NFTs merging to create weird new forms of yield that get the imaginations of investors and biddlers firing. The pioneer in the NFT mining industry was arguably Rarible, a marketplace and minter. It growth hacked its user base by airdropping RARI tokens to anyone that had transacted in a respectable amount of NFTs. It was a governance token that it used to turn its marketplace into a DAO. Rarible further rewarded users for transactions on the platform, which has generated a substantial amount of questionable volume, but also has helped persuade creators that the additional benefit to transacting there makes it an advantageous place to list work, Bruckman said. So now NFT fans have fractional ownership, auctions, sales platforms, all the things that seem like normal, natural pieces of the puzzle for setting up a dynamic market. But the buzz stems from the fact that stranger things are getting built. Bold experiments. First off, there's Avagachi, a small startup with funding from the money market Aave, among others. Avagachi has a clever variable rarity structure described well in a recent report by Delphi Digital. In short, Avagachis are little playable avatars that can be used in the game world the company is building, both as protocol governance and to play actual games. There's a lot of ways they can change and be upgraded, called rarity farming, but if too many players improve their character in the same way, it can effectively lose rarity. Like in the DeFi game-based money, it's all about guessing how other players will move. What's really interesting about Avagachi, however, is this: every character represents a real stake on Aave. The owner can liquidate the stake at any time, but their Avagachi will disappear. So it's a test to see what happens to playability when characters have real value above and beyond their gaming value. For Blockade CEO De Corcel, this linkage makes complete sense. DeFi will always look like a shell game until it's financing things of real value, stuff someone would just buy because they want it. Are people going to do that with their houses, or will they do it maybe with fun digital stuff first? All these DeFi projects are looking for the core economic leap for all of these microeconomies, she argued. As a game developer, you have already designed an economic loop that's valuable. Don't buy dollar meme. But the real experiment is meme. As noted, meme started with a jest from Lyle. One of Meme's insiders, a so-called Citadel member, is Jackson, who sticks to one name and is also on the team making the payments platform Flexa. He made a bold case for Meme to CoinDesk in a phone call, saying, "The project is on a roll where the whole NFT DeFi narrative is kind of tied to Meme and kind of leading the pack." Folks in Lyle's cohort got interested in his humorous nudge, a Telegram group formed and a stranger spun up the code to make the Meme token. "It was like, what can we build?" Jackson said. He describes himself as someone who typically sticks to projects that make sense to him, where the business case is easy to see. Meme has felt completely different, he said. "It's been more like a vibe and a crew first, with purpose coming later. This is much like what DeFi Pulse's Scott Lewis argued about the vegetable tokens of distant early September, saying that the future may be defined by groups first galvanized by an image, only to decide what to do together later. I, daily, deeply contemplate what I am learning from this," Jackson said of Meme. For now, Lyle told CoinDesk over Telegram, "Meme is just paying cool artists, largely out of pocket, to make compelling NFTs and giving people a way to buy them by locking up Meme and earning points in the Meme system. They aren't really tokens because they aren't tradable so far. If people like the images locked onto Meme's NFTs, they might want to figure out how to own them. Relative to the other hot projects in DeFi, we're a lot more accessible," Jackson said. "That's something everyone we spoke with pointed out. People get content, whether it's stuff for video games, art, music or literature. People have made NFTs of a lot of weird stuff. This is the media art bent to what's happening in DeFi," Desai said. Meme is doing something that has yet to be seen in the crypto space, testing a product first, then sorting out the business plan later if they see traction. It's an old script in Silicon Valley, but in crypto, everything credible has largely needed to make sense as a business up front, the only question being whether people would come. And Meme won't be the last. A different cohort of crypto luminaries tried to imitate Meme with few, but that ended in a shillacious disaster. Rope still lingers out there, and it's not clear what that is, besides leaning more on a 4chan aesthetic. And, off in the background, there is Shroom, which has been perhaps the least explicative. Its sole blog post mentions a decentralized exchange or DEX, though, which could be a hint. A market with puzzles wired in could be the trick, and that could be what NFTs meeting DeFi unlocks. NFTs, just as art. The value proposition is a little. But once you have a game, the value is inherent to the game, De Corsell said. This concludes our edition for today. We want to thank again Paycademy, the first business school to learn payments and fintech, for their support. You can find more information on their website at paycademy.com. We hope you enjoyed it and see you tomorrow for our next edition.